from LPM.
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Welcome to Where Y'all Really From, a podcast about Asian Americans in Kentucky. I'm your host for this episode, Dan Wu. My guest today, Joanne Lin Camille, is a senior extension specialist in the Department of Family and Consumer Sciences Extension at the University of Kentucky. She holds a master's degree in cognitive experimental psychology and a doctorate in family sciences from the University of Kentucky. Dr. Lin Camille's work focuses on improving the health and well-being of individuals and families. Dr. Lin Camille, Joanne, welcome to the show.
Hi, Dan.
How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
In certain circumstances, do you insist on being called Dr. Lin Camille, or are you a first name kind of person?
Oh, no, I'm a first name kind of person.
Okay.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I prefer to be called by my first name. And really, the doctor part, that's just for my parents.
I was going to say, the stereotype of the immigrant Asian parents. You get that doctor name in front of your name, they've got to be pretty happy, right?
Oh, yeah. And that was all my dad, with the guilt. You know, stereotypes are based on truths sometimes. And, you know, for him, I had gotten my master's and started working a little bit. And then he said to me, "Are you ever going to get your doctorate before I die?"
Wow.
I'm like, wow, Dad, thanks. And so I did.
Yeah. I am proudly the first man in my family in three generations, actually four generations, not to have a PhD.
Oh, my gosh.
So I broke that mold.
How did that go over?
It went okay. I mean, also, my parents weirdly were like the opposite of tiger parents. They somehow let me get an art studio degree, like a BA in something completely useless. So I don't even know how that happened, if they missed the seminar on being tiger parents or what it is. So I'm kind of a weird exception, but here I am. We like to start off the show talking about the title of our show. And as Asian Americans, like, this is a question we get every day. So for you, when you get asked, where are you from, how do you react to it? How do you feel about it?
For me, I always respond, Bowling Green, Kentucky. That's where I'm from.
Yeah, but where are you really from?
Yeah, and then I do the whole spiel. Oh, well, you know, my parents are from Laos. My mother is Chinese. You know, her parents had immigrated from China to Laos. So my family is from Laos, but I've never been. I was born here in Kentucky, Bowling Green, Kentucky, and really it's all I've ever known. And so usually we, you know, either have conversation from that point. But to me, I don't mind, you know, because it shows interest. You know, they're trying to learn a little bit about who I am and my culture. And so it doesn't bother me. I know some people, they probably get it a lot more as well, you know, that question. But for me, I just try to look at it, you know, from a positive standpoint and just have conversation with these people and learn a little bit about themselves as well.
Yeah, you definitely take it better than I do sometimes. depends on my mood. So you have a particularly interesting birth story. Tell me about that.
I was actually born, Western Kentucky University it's called the Rock House,
mm-hmm.
called the Rock House. It's no longer there, but at the time, they were having English for second language. And so, you know, my parents, as refugees, were required to take that English as a second language class. And so one day, you know, they were in class, and then my mom starts going into labor right then and there. And And she tells my dad, and my dad's like, okay, I'll call, you know, we'll call the ambulance. And so they had somebody call the ambulance. My mom's like, no, this baby's coming. She pulls down her, you know, her pants. My dad's like, what are you doing? Because, you know, Asian culture, like, there's like modesty is like everything. Like, you do not show like anything. He's like, pulls her pants back up. And she was like, are you crazy? I said, this is coming. You know, the baby's coming now. And so he ended up having to deliver me right there. In the rock house, in the middle of class. And so the ambulance did not come in time. My mom was correct. And years later, because, you know, Western Kentucky University is my alma mater for my undergrad, my bachelor's. And I was in an anthropology class, and we had class out there in the rock house. And I thought, oh, how funny. You know, like, this has all come full circle. Now I'm back in the rock house.
Back in your actual birthplace.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And so just to tie that in with, you know, to my name, because Joanne, you know, like my brother's name is Ponswan Nkemi, which is like Ponswanee. And then everybody asked me, how did you get so lucky to be Joanne? Uh-huh. So, you know, after my mom gave birth to me, the teacher was like, okay, you have to give her a name now. And my mom's like, now? It's like, yeah. And so she writes a whole bunch of names on the chalkboard. And then so she's like reading each one out to my mom. And my mom's like, no, I don't like that one. I don't like that one. And then she got to Joanne. She was like, yeah, I like that one. And so that's how I got my first name, Joanne.
Was just from a random assortment of potential names from an ESL teacher.
Yes.
On the board.
Yes. And apparently she forgot to mention to my parents that I needed a middle name, so I don't have a middle name.
That's fantastic. So your parents were refugees from Laos. Did they talk much about that experience with you growing up?
You know, they really didn't. My mom, every once in a while, would tell me things about, you know, how terrible it was, you know, slip in little things here and there. But, she, you know, they really didn't like to talk about it. Well, my mom particularly, because she said it just made her really sad. And so, but sometimes, you know, we'd be watching movies or things that would bring up some memories, and she would share a little bit about it. My dad... He worked a lot, you know, when I was growing up. And so he, you know, he worked during the day, or I was at school during the day, and then he worked nights. And so I wouldn't really see him. So we didn't have a lot of in-depth conversation, you know, when it came to history and past. More so as an adult, you know, we're, you know, I'm starting to talk to him a little bit more about it. And, you know, and he's been sharing some things here and there. But I've yet to really sit down and you know, just talk about their experiences. My mom passed away about 2 years ago. So unfortunately, I don't get to have that opportunity. So I would really like to do that with my father at some point.
And you've never been to Laos, you said?
I've never been to Laos. Yeah. I've been to Thailand, which, you know, neighbors Laos. Mm-hmm. And then I was supposed to go, you know, I had the visa and everything, but... My family, my cousins were doing the ceremony at a Buddhist temple, and that took longer than we all thought. And so I had to return back to the United States before, you know, they got to go. But I had, you know, I only had a certain amount of vacation time, so I had to return before I could actually go.
Yeah. What was it like growing up in a place like Bowling Green, where not only were you an Asian American, but you were probably from a place that a lot of people just didn't know anything about, especially in a place like Bowling Green.
Mm-hmm. Growing up in Bowling Green, it was kind of strange, you know, because I hear, you know, other Asian American stories about, you know, how they grew up. But so Bowling Green, we actually lived on the outskirts of Bowling Green, just a small town. It's called Rockfield, very rural. And even Bowling Green is not how it is now, is mm-hmm. not the Bowling Green, you know, where I grew up. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was very small town there. And then you get even smaller on the outskirts. And so, you know, for me, kids were just kids. You know, we played. I mean, it was never really brought up much, you know. about me being Asian. Hmm. You know, every once in a while you get the occasional, you know, ching chong, you know, that kind of disparaging remarks and stuff. But, you know, really, I grew up with a certain cohort of children. And, you know, we moved from grade to grade all together, almost, you know, with only like a few new kids in each class. But for the most part, yeah, we knew each other starting from kindergarten all the way, you know, and into middle school and high school, because, you know, all the elementary kids kind of filtered into a certain middle school based on location and then high school. So growing up, I knew all these kids and they all knew me. And, you know, for the most part, you know, we were friends.
Yeah. Do you feel like there was a time or a moment in your life, maybe later on or in college or after, where you started really thinking about your identity as an Asian American, as it kind of stood apart from, you know, people around you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I like to consider myself a late bloomer because I honestly, I really didn't start thinking about myself as an Asian American until even after graduate school, where some of my coworkers that I met, you know, met and her friends, just phenomenal people, also Asian Americans, and just getting to know them and, you know, how proud they were about their heritage and just taking a cue from that and just realizing that that was an identity that I had not really reflected on all these years growing up. In fact, you know, just going through this process of acculturating as a first-generation Asian American, I think for myself, I spent so much time just trying to not fit in, but just trying to live in this in this different culture as my own family, and then trying to navigate that, you know, and being a part of that, you know, high school is, you know, is a challenge in itself, that I never really thought about it, and in some ways I almost shied away from thinking about it in a lot of ways. Like, I don't want to be associated with it. I need to be, I need to belong to, you know, this culture. Not in order to succeed, but I guess in order to feel like I belonged in some ways. But I never realized that until, you know, I met this group of friends and, you know, and then I started, and then, you know, as you get older too, you have a lot of realizations about, you know, your own self and your own families and also reasons why growing up your parents did what they did. You know, everything makes a lot more sense. You have a lot more like worldly knowledge after you go to college. And so I just started piecing all that together and just started thinking about that and really wanting to come to terms with it. And then having children too, and then really wanting them to know, my culture, you know, and some of the like wonderful, you know, experiences and traditions that I grew up with. I wanted that for them. And so really I'm just at the beginning of my journey, and truly understanding my Asian heritage, my Asian culture and traditions, and really learning and reflecting.
Looking back on your childhood, and I know, you know, this is true for, I think, most immigrant kids of any culture growing up here, having been born here, or like me coming here as a kid, I always remember there was just sort of an existential code switching that I did, that when I walked in the house at home and took off my shoes, it was like Chinese kid Dan, you know, respectful of parents and the whole sort of nine yards. When I get in my room, then I can, you know, draw comic books and listen to heavy metal and do whatever. And then when I went to school, I was this other kid. Did you ever feel like you had that sort of separation between like home and the rest of the world? Like you were sort of two identities?
Not really. I think I was naive in some ways. You know, I don't know if I just assumed everybody had this, you know, kind of lived the same life that I did, you know, and where they ate, you know, bacon with rice or hot dogs with rice, you know, like, you know, that's my favorite breakfast. But yeah, I don't think that I was really cognizant of it, you know, until later on, you know, and I'm still starting to realize certain things that, oh, you know, the rest of the world doesn't do that. You know, like my family loves corn and they'll steam it and they'll cook it by the like the bags and bushels. Right. And so then they'll just put it on the table and you just grab it and corn on the cob and you just eat it. And I remember one day where, you know, that's just what we do. And I was on the go. I was going somewhere and I grabbed, corn on the cob and I was sitting in the car and I was eating it. And I was at a stoplight and then I turn around and the car next to me, this lady's just looking at me. And she's like, what is she doing? She's just eating a corn on the cob. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm eating a corn on the cob. Like, oh, yeah, that's probably not normal.
It's everybody doesn't do that?
Yeah.
When we first moved to the States when I was a kid, at the time in China, chicken was really expensive. And then you come to America where chicken is like the cheapest protein. And my parents just went a little bonkers. Like, we had chicken with every meal. And I remember growing up, our sort of a treat meal was a KFC box.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
The universal appeal of fried chicken, mm-hmm. right? For you now, as a parent, you have two young children. Mm-hmm. For you, like, what's your sort of way of, I don't know, connecting them with your culture and heritage of, you know, of your parents in that, you know, like second generation folks always have that a little bit of that gap and separation and you're, you know, we're so busy trying to integrate into the larger world, right? So for you, are there particular sort of access points that you use to kind of connect your children? Is it food? Is it music? Is it books?
It's definitely food. Food is really important mm-hmm. to my family. And they're all phenomenal cooks. And fortunately, my children aren't picky eaters, and they nice. Love everything my family cooks. And books. And I'm still trying to navigate it because it is difficult because my family lives about 2.5 hours away from us. So, we don't get to visit often, but I do try to get to Bowling Green every month, every, 2 months, because I want them to have that connection. I have a large family in terms of, a lot of aunts and uncles, mm-hmm. And then the cousins. And so and there's a lot more books now, especially books for children. And so I'm trying to navigate that because right now, my children, I have a almost 3-year-old and then a 5-year-old. Mm-hmm. And so some of the books are still not age appropriate. And so, I'm just talking to them, having conversation about, this different culture, showing them on the map. Mm-hmm. And then, eventually we'll visit, maybe like in a year or two, we'll go and visit. It's hard because they're not able to conceptualize it yet. Like my daughter, I'm trying to teach them Laotian here and there, but I need to be with my family for them to talk so they can hear the conversation, mm-hmm. In Laotian. For now, we'll do certain words and things. And, my daughter, we were talking and she said, next year in school that she'll be able to learn a little bit of Spanish through like a special course. And mm-hmm. she said, tell the teacher that I already know de nada, sabaydi, gracias. I'm like, oh, honey, sabaydi is not Spanish. That's Laotian. And she was like, oh. So she thinks whenever I try to teach her Laotian, she thinks that I'm teaching her Spanish.
That's funny. It's just the other language. It's the non-English language.
Yeah.
How is your Laotian?
It's not great. I am so embarrassed. I, of course, I was fluent. And then since mm-hmm. I moved away and, I really don't use it much. And then even when my dad calls, I'm like, Dad, don't talk to me in English, please.
Talk to me in English. I need the practice.
Yeah. But he always talks to me in English.
Huh.
But it's not great. But, you know, I'm determined. I've got books. I've got an app. So there's apps now, which is great. You know, technology is so great now. And so I'm like having to review and stuff. So even every time I go down to Bowling Green, I'll like take the book out and I'll like just review just to, you know, get those synapses firing. But yeah.
Yeah. It's so hard to maintain. I came here as an 8-year-old and I spoke very fluent, you know, Mandarin. We spoke Mandarin in the home and I still speak it, but I realize my vocabulary is horrific. So terrible that I can't say almost any sentence without interjecting some English in there. And, you know, speaking of technology, there are often times where I need to explain more complicated things to my mom, and I don't have the vocabulary for it. So I end up typing it in English into Google Translate and then copy and pasting the Chinese into a text to her. And then she'll reply with a voice memo. Uh-huh. And then I'll either reply with a voice memo or, you know, typing and translating more stuff out. So it's kind of interesting how we can kind of use that technology a little bit to kind of bridge these little gaps.
Oh, I should try that. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
I have to see if Google Translate
Yeah,
has
I'll bet you they can. Yeah, Google. I mean, it's not always 100% accurate. And what I end up doing is after I type in the English, I will hit the little microphone button so I can hear the Chinese, the Mandarin spoken. So then I can see if it sounds right. Because sometimes there are idioms that just don't translate, you know, that end up being weird. So I'll listen to it first, make sure it sounds right, and then I'll paste it in for her. So, tricks of the trade. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is Where Y'all Really From, a podcast from LPM, Louisville Public Media. Welcome back to Where Y'all Really From. The other thing I'm really interested to talk about, too, is you have a female partner and you're raising two kids. And, you know, there's a lot that's been said and lots have been not said, particularly with different immigrant groups and how a lot of first generation parents kind of deal or don't deal with LGBTQ kids and issues. How have you navigated that stuff with your mom and dad or your dad?
So I did have to navigate it with my mom and dad when my mom was still alive. And I probably did not navigate it well. Mm-hmm. So it was all very foreign to me. So not only having to navigate being an Asian American and trying to figure out, you know, how to be. I was also trying to navigate just, you know, coming to terms with my own sexuality, which, you know, my family, we love each other so much, and we show that by doing things for others, taking care of each other. Mm-hmm. But we're terrible at communication.
Yeah.
And so we just how, you know, my dad and I haven't talked about his experiences as, you know, as being a refugee. There's a lot of important things in life that we just have not really sat down and talked about. And so, you know, in my late teens, early 20s, you know, when I came to that realization, I just didn't talk to them about it. I just thought, well, I am who I am, and you know, I guess they'll just figure it out.
Did you ever have a coming out moment?
I did later on, yeah. And so for a long time, you know, I just figured, you know, I would bring friends home, and then eventually, my spouse now, you know, after 10 years of being together, you know, same-sex marriage wasn't legal then.
Right.
I just figured that they would get the hint. And, you know, and because, you know, we would visit and she would spend the night. And,
ten
years, that's a pretty long
right.
time. So I just thought, well, we don't need to talk about this. And then to the like, I rationalized it in my head.
You just assumed that it would be obvious.
It would be obvious. Uh-huh. And then I rationalized that it would be better for them, that this is probably how they would want it to be, because then they wouldn't have to explain to their friends or like answer questions and things like that, you know, because with Asian culture, there's a lot of emphasis on face and, you know.
Yeah.
And so, but it came to the point where, you know, there had to be a coming out story because, you know, same-sex marriage was legalized. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but my wife and I wanted to have children. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, man, I can't do either of those things without telling my parents, you know, can't all of a sudden be like, hey, guess what? Like,
we brought some babies.
Yeah.
Me and my roommate.
Yeah.
We brought home some babies.
Yeah. And so I was really nervous. And I sat down with my dad first because I actually thought it would be the harder of the two. Because he's very religious. You know, growing up, we went to church every Sunday. He still goes to church every Sunday, you know, just Baptist upbringing. And so I just had no idea how he would take it. So I told him first, and I was just blown away by the, you know, the love and the, you know, that he showed. And just, he said he just wanted me to be happy. And that, of course, he assumed, you know, after all this time, he kind of had an idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, that like he just wanted me to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, I'm going to tell mom next.
Uh-huh.
And he said, let me just tell your mom. Let me tell your mom?
Huh.
And I'm like, are you sure? He was like, yeah, it would probably be better coming from me.
Huh.
And so I said, okay, because not only are we getting married, but we're going to have kids.
Right.
So we're gonna try to have some children.
Uh-huh.
So we really need to tell her soon. He's like, yes, sir. And so, you know, months go by. I'm like, Dad, like, have you told mom yet? And he's like, no, I'll tell her soon. And okay, but we really, and so it finally got to the point where it was like the month that I was going to get married, and I wasn't having a big wedding or anything like that, just of the peace and whatnot. But I was like, Dad, you know, like that, there's no more time left.
Yeah.
And he was like, I just can't. And then I don't even know how it happened. So I think maybe he eventually told her it came out, and she didn't, I think she was more upset that I didn't tell her, that we weren't able to have that communication as her daughter. Because I know, it's like, she felt, like, very close to me. And so it took her a little bit of time. And she was pretty mad at me, and I had to apologize a lot.
Well, I mean, blame it on your dad on that one.
Yeah,
come on.
He's
the one. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I apologized a lot. And she... It wasn't really until I mentioned, oh, yeah, you know, so we are having kids, that she was like, oh, yeah, all is forgiven. She really just wanted grandkids,
yeah.
So she was all on board.
You got them the doctorate, and you got them the kids. Like, what else do you need, right?
Exactly. But that was, so that was an eye-opening experience for me, having the courage, you know, to... Or even not having the courage, and then seeing how that ended up, having that conversation. I'm thankful that it didn't hurt our relationship.
Hmm.
And it made me realize that I was just so wrong in understanding my parents.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think to me, I had always thought, well, we don't ever talk about things and stuff, equating that to, you know, they just really don't care, they don't want to know. But, you know, as an adult, I realized that's, you know, it's furthest from the truth. I think in a lot of ways, growing up in their culture, and then also just growing up in American culture and trying to navigate this whole new life, this whole new world, they didn't know how to talk about those kinds of things. And that would have been a great moment for me learning moment for both, you know, all of us. But, you know, I'm lesson learned a little late. But I'm, you know, I'm thankful. And I'm just so blown away because, you know, even through the whole thing of my mom being upset with me, like she never treated, you know, my wife any differently. She was just so loving towards her, which, I mean, it just, if I ever doubted like how much my parents loved me, it was that moment that I realized, and my family, because they all rallied together. My aunts, you know, my uncle, they just all came together and they're like, you know what? You are who you are. You can't change that. You know, you live in the way that it's going, that you're going to be the happiest, and we support you. And that to me just really sums up Asian culture too. Like family is everything and so strong. And that's something I want to teach my kids.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and if you're going to come out, make sure your parents know you're going to have kids. That'll soften it a little bit, right?
Grandkids, always.
And you already had your doctorate at that point, too,
yes,
right?
Yes, I did.
Boom. Yeah, so, you know, you check off a few boxes there.
And, you know, in terms of spouses, I didn't do too bad. That checked off boxes there, too, because she has her PhD and she has her doctorates in physical therapy. So
there you go.
I'm like, okay. You know, these boxes are checked.
Yeah, you brought home a bunch of degrees.
She may be a woman, but, you know, she...
That's great. Well, Joanne, we like to end the show with our lightning round questions. Are you ready?
All right.
What is your superpower?
I am pretty decent at MacGyvering things, you know, anything around the house, if it's like temporarily broken or broken, I can temporarily fix it, you know, with like bubble gum and paper clips.
Duct tape.
Yeah. Nice. I just have to tell the kids, you know, don't jiggle that too hard.
Yeah. What is your favorite song to jam out to?
That's a hard one, and because it depends on mood. I love all types of music. But I think I'm going to go back to like... one of my first loves, Prince, Seven.
Yeah.
Have you heard that?
Yes.
Yeah. Seven. Yeah.
That's a good one.
Go with that one.
What is your favorite comfort food?
Oh, I love noodles. Nigiri, because I don't make homemade noodles, but my family makes homemade noodles. So if I'm in town, then it's going to be their noodles.
Uh-huh.
But if not, then nigiri.
Yeah, good.
Instant noodles.
Nice package of Korean ramen.
Yes, but which the pandemic made really hard to get.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that was,
And what is the most Kentucky thing that you do?
The most Kentucky thing I do. I guess the obvious would be bourbon. I do enjoy a glass of bourbon and then visiting all the different distilleries. But also, I've been told that whenever I get really passionate talking about something, I have this Kentucky accent that starts to come out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so there's that. Yeah.
Get the y'all drawl.
Yes.
Coming
yes.
out. Uh-huh. Yeah. For me, I drop my G's. So I never say walking or talking. It's always walking, talking, going somewhere.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just that softened Southern G.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Joanne, this has been a pleasure talking to you, and such a great story and such a great birth story. I assume your kids did not have such an exciting birth story.
Not as exciting as that one, but, you know, I wasn't the one caring. If you ask my wife that, it might be different.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at least it wasn't in the middle of class.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where Y'all Really From is created by Dan Wu, Charlene Buckles, Nima Kulkarni, and Mae Surmec, and hosted by Dan and Charlene. Our show is edited by Alex Cooper, and our music is by Kojin Toshiro. Graphic design by Leanne Gann. Where Y'all Really From is part of the Louisville Public Media Podcast Incubator, with support from the Community Foundation of Louisville, Podchaser, Rankings.io, and the Eye Care Institute's Butchertown Clinical Trials. Our executive producer is Laura Ellis. For more information and to keep in touch, visit whereyallreallyfrom.org.
Support for LPM Podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.